In our world, religion appears as a conservative force. It seems to be holding up the past and perhaps holding back the future. But since redemption is the goal of the Jewish people, and the world, as we can see, is far from redeemed, then in truth, it must be meant to play the role of a liberal force. Liberal in its true sense, liberty and liberation. And we find this notion in all its complexity planted right at the root of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of the Exodus from Egypt, with the giving of the first national commandment, Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctification of the new moon. So the question is, what does the moon bring to the process of redemption? First of all, got to note that this commandment is about tying together the sun and the moon in the Hebrew calendar. There were two primary conceptions of time brought forward out of the ancient world, cyclical and linear. The source of the cyclical is somewhat obvious. Sunrise, sunset. The sun represents that unending and therefore unchanging cycle of the seasons. And perhaps this is why one of the opening phrases of Kohelet is Ein Chadash Tachat HaShemesh. There's nothing new under the sun, Davka. Unlike the sun, the moon shows a progress, birth, growth, and death. And in fact, experientially, the linear notion of time is rooted in our own human experience of coming into the world, living for a specific amount of time, and then leaving it. Now, in tying together these two, we've taken a different path than the Christian calendar, which is purely solar, or the Muslim calendar, which is purely lunar. But not only do the tying together of these two things represent a new technical calendar, they also mark the beginning of a new historical process. Because from the moment God shows Moshe the new moon, Am Yisrael will count its months and mark its national events by the light of that moon. And together, the sun and the moon in the calendar will give birth to the spiral notion of time. Because the Torah teaches us that the world has an origin in creation, and our tradition has imbued us with the belief that it has an end, at least in the sense of healing its brokenness, and thus we are on a linear path. Let it be soon, let it be now. Nevertheless, our annual calendar teaches us that each year we pass through the same points as our ancestors did and marked for us, and we strive to access the spiritual energy available on the days which they experienced before us. This is the phrase that we discussed on Hanukkah, Bayamim Hahem Bazman Hazeh, in those days, in the linear sense, in this time, in the sense of the cycle of the year. But, you know, the moon doesn't just disappear. It's born again. And it's specifically the rebirth which the commandment to sanctifying the moon is marking. And that's because of the role which the moon plays in redemption. It's the death of the old which allows for the birth of the new. As the Kabbalists teach us, the seed must rot in the ground before a tree can grow. In the same way that the Torah opens with the darkness on the face of the deep before anything is made, the open potentiality of chaos must always precede creation. But why? Well, in the biological metaphor, it's because though the genetic material in every single acorn that an oak tree produces is more or less identical, we know that no two oak trees will ever be alike. And it's because of that moment of rot, of chaos and breakdown, which precedes the sprouting of growth. Because that's what allows the encapsulated wisdom of the past, as it was represented in the DNA, to open itself to the riches of the present in the soil and the nutrients and the water and the light, in order to bring forth the future, which is the tree. And it's this rot, this chaos and breakdown, which precedes growth, precedes redemption, that frees the present from the past. You know, on Seder night, we're going to consider the question, what would have happened if Pharaoh had freed us? Why is it so important that we make the point that God himself, Bichvodo Uvatzmo, came and set us free? If Pharaoh had freed us, wouldn't it have been the same? Well, maybe one could say in the physical sense the answer is yes, we would no longer be ruled over by another people. But we would have remained a product of Egyptian culture. In our innermost selves, beholden to our former masters, and therefore in some sense continuing the experience of slavery, we would have been unable to bring the consciousness of liberation into the world. Because that consciousness is rooted in a break with the past. Because the message of the death and rebirth of the moon, of the rotting of the seed in the ground, of God's personal intervention in history, is that the past does not determine the present. And if the past doesn't determine the present, that means that the future is free as well. You know, why is it that we as a people have so long fought the battle of creation, something from nothing, yesh me'ayin, as such a critical element of the Torah worldview? Well, perhaps it's because of the problem of a Newtonian universe. Right? When you look at Newtonian physics, I want you to picture a pool table. Right? You rack the balls into the triangle, you take the cue and you hit the ball, and they all go flying off in what seems to be random directions. But a Newtonian universe is a world of smooth continuity, and therefore perfectly deterministic. If I could identify the position and momentum of every particle in the universe, I could simply reel it all back to the beginning and know not only where it had come from, but why everything had happened. And thus, by using the present to understand the past in the Newtonian sense, everything becomes a playing out of that original starting condition, and any free action in the future, an illusion. Unless you think that this is purely a matter of physics, just ask yourself, where exactly does your free will lie? We don't choose our race, we don't choose our religion, we don't choose the country, language, social class into which we're born. We are most often passive recipients of our early education, as well as the powerful and often sometimes traumatic experiences which shape our base psychology. And this is without even getting into how much our experience is shaped by physical factors, like our appearance or our endocrine system and the psychochemical balance it manages. Wondering where your free choice lies? Where can we locate our power of choice in order that it can serve as a foundation for conscious action and therefore true freedom? We can locate it in the quantum moments, in the gap between what was and what is not yet. Because in the end of the day, what it means to liberate my consciousness, as much as it is to liberate my body, it is to take hold of the present and to insist that it is not a smooth, continuous product of the past, but is an infinite moment in and of itself. That the past is gone. It's rotted in the ground. It is broken there on the banks of the Nile. And that the choice I make now is a choice of freedom. And in that gap between what was and what is not yet lies the foundation for freedom of action, and therefore gives the context to any meaningful morality, as we see in the going out from Egypt. So, if you consider this a little further, you might be led to ask, considering how important liberation, freedom, newness, chidush are, then why hold on to the past at all? I mean, we as a people are very committed to our past, to our traditions, to halakha, to Jewish law. Well, don't they have to collapse in light of what I've just said in order for the future to flourish? Isn't the past just holding us back? The truth is, there's a lot to be discussed in that sense, and if you're interested, I encourage you to take a look on our SoundCloud page at my Remember the Days of Old history class, which is really about telling a story of the past, which can create a present identity that's empowered to shape the future that we want to live in. But for now, I'll just say this. In order to address the challenge of the past, we need to look at the other element which characterizes the new month of Nisan, of Parshat HaChodesh, that we're celebrating this Shabbat. And that is Chanukat HaMizbeach, the dedication of the altar by the children of Israel in the wilderness. The Seder Olam Rabba, the rabbinic chronology of the Tanakh, teaches us that the Mishkan, the tabernacle, was finished being built on the 25th of Kislev. That's Hanukkah Day, and for those of you who want to think further on the topic, I recommend you contemplate why it is the Mishkan was finished on the 25th of Kislev, but waited to for its Chanukah, for its dedication, its introduction into actual service, until the 1st of Nisan, the month, as the Seder Olam Rabbah teaches us, in which Yitzchak was born. Why the months of wait? It's because there are two elements to evolution: form and change. If all we have is form, then there is no life. Because in our world, only that which is dead or was inanimate to begin with is unchanging. By the way, this is the secret of understanding both creation and redemption. Because what are we striving for? We're striving for perfection. The kicker is that in our world, there is no perfect, no complete, because anything which is no longer growing is either dead or was inanimate to begin with. There is no shlemut, no wholeness. There is only the ever striving toward, the hishtalmut, the process of perfecting as opposed to perfection. And thus, the only perfect one is the one who is always striving to perfect, to grow anew. Is the expression of that which is perfect in our world. But if there's only constant change, then form is lost, and life becomes a revolution, and perhaps even a devolution, because all the wisdom of the past, which is embodied in our inherited self, be it in the biological, in the cultural, or the historical, can be lost as well. And so the Mishkan offers us the embodiment of an evolving relationship with God. The structure is complete, as we spent weeks and weeks discussing, whole, sacred, inflexible. But it's lifeless until Nisan, until the month of the birth of Yitzchak. And why Yitzchak? Well, his name says it all, the child of laughter. Right? And not any old laughter. The laughter of Yitzchak is an expression of the freedom from the so-called reality, which two 90-plus-year-old parents suddenly discover when they're pregnant and give birth to a child. Who knew? Who knew that the world held such potential, such freedom? Because all of my expectations, everything I ever thought was true, inflexible, is now proven to just be an illusion. And they laughed, and Yitzchak was born. So here we are on Parshat HaChodesh, the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which marks the first dedication of the moon at that opening phase of the leaving of Egypt, and it marks many years later, or a few years later I should say, the dedication of the altar, the tabernacle in the wilderness. And I want to ask you, what's new? If we've been marking this day for more than 3,000 years, then the only answer one can give is, I am. Not only in the sense that my generation may be further from Sinai, but it's one step closer to redemption, but in the sense that the next step in redemption, the stepping out of Egypt, of Mitzrayim, of the narrow places, is a stepping out of those narrow places within ourselves. Because I, as an individual, may not have the power to recreate the world, and I certainly wouldn't want to plunge it into chaos, but I can choose to bring myself anew to the world every day. And if we all do that together, then we will be ever evolving toward redemption. If you like this Torah, you can find more of it at SulamYaakov.com. You can follow us on SoundCloud. You can find Sounds of Sulam Yaakov on iTunes or on Stitcher. Or you can come on down to the Beit Midrash in Nachlaot and just say hi.